Hello and welcome to the June 2nd edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. We have a great show. We'll get the details about Perseverance Theater Summerfest. Daryl Bowers will be here to talk about the IDEA homeschool program. We'll also chat with Scott Willman from the Cancer Treatment Centers of America about a healthy lifestyles presentation tonight. And Deb Vanesse, an author from Anchorage, will be here to talk about her writing workshop tonight and about an Alaska sampler project. All that and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. South Africa's Nobel laureate Desmond Tutu is in northern Alberta for a conference on oil sands development and native treaties. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the outspoken critic of oil sands development says he's not there to tell Canadians what to do.
Even a brief helicopter tour of the massive oil sands development near Fort McMurray wasn't enough to shake Desmond Tutu's belief that the oil industry is causing harm to the climate and the environment. He said it is important that something be done about the horrendous effects and impacts on the only world we have. Tutu has been an outspoken critic in the past of the Alberta oil sands, and he wasn't holding back during this trip either.
The fact that this filth is being created now, when the link between carbon emissions and global warming is so obvious, reflects negligence and greed.
Tutu also says oil sands development strips away the rights of First Nations. But Chief Alan Adam of the Athabasca Chippewyan First Nation, who co-sponsored the conference, was more cautious.
Let's put a halt on further projects until we could figure out what we're going to do.
And with good reason. Adams First Nation does about $270 million worth of business with oil sands companies each year. He says his people are not against the development. What they want is control of the substances that go into the nearby Athabasca River. Desmond Tutu was invited to Fort McMurray by the Athabasca Chippewyan First Nation and a Toronto law firm specializing in Aboriginal law. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In Alaska, two Athabascan men completed a more than 300-mile trek over the weekend. It was in honor of the late Katie John and her cause, subsistence rights. KNBA's Jacqueline Estes reports.
Fred John is 71 years old and his brother Harry is 65. It was Fred's idea to have the distance walk to honor their mother, Katie John, who died a year ago on May 31st at age 97. She was one of three plaintiffs in a lawsuit the Native American Rights Fund filed in 1985 against the state of Alaska over their traditional fishing rights. The state lost, but appealed the case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, which Fred says prompted the walk.
I did this because everybody, when Governor Parnell put my mother's case, Katie John's case, up to the Supreme Court again, everybody jumped in to fight against it, AFN and everything. I decided as one of the John family, we've got to do something. And I thought, I'll walk. I'll make a long-distance walk.
The Supreme Court found in Katie John's favor in March. Fred John says he hopes the state of Alaska will stop attacking subsistence.
We are not a threat to anybody. We are not a threat to the state. We are not a threat to anybody. If we start telling our story, people will accept us for who we are. Dene, we are Dene. We are people. The human beings is what they call us.
Fred John asked some 200 people at a celebration of the completed walk to consider forming shorter walks every year to promote understanding of tribal rights. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jacqueline Estes.
In June 2004, Marcella Lebeau received the French Legion of Honor. The Lakota woman was one of 100 veterans honored in Paris during the 60th anniversary commemorating the invasion of Normandy. Lebeau served as a nurse during World War II as a first lieutenant in the Army Nurse Corps. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com.
National Native News brings you information from around Indian Country and the world. To do this, we rely on financial support from organizations like yours. Find out how to reach our listeners while also supporting this program by visiting nativenews.net.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3.05 p.m. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and the weather is rain likely, highs around 58. Tonight, rain likely in the evening, then scattered showers late, lows around 45. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, scattered showers, lows around 45. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy as well, highs around 62. So thank you for joining us. It is June 2nd. You are listening to KTOO News. And on the phone, I have our first guest. It's Boston Christopher from Across the Bridge. I'm in Juneau. He's in Douglas at the Perseverance Theater. And we're going to chat about something new for the theater. I think it's new. Hi, Boston. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Joan. How are you this fine afternoon?
I'm great. And once again, I have to say, Boston, you are a fantastic pirate.
Oh, thank you.
That was great. Exactly. That was a great production.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And speaking of, the whole season was just fantastic. I love Boeing. I'm looking forward to the fantastic season next year, which we could talk about a little bit. But you've got something cooking this summer. So what's on the slate?
Yeah, so we're doing a new program, and it's called Summerfest. It's called Summerfest 14. And basically, the gist of it is, there's three shows that will be running in a rotating calendar all summer, basically all summer, from June 28th through August 6th, downtown at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. So at the Jack, right across there from KTOO. We're turning the Jack into a theater. There's going to be three shows, basically just like you would see over here in Douglas, but we're doing them there in the Jack. And we'll change out the sets between shows. Sometimes there's three show days. The calendar is a little wacky, and there's performances at all different times. We're trying something with doing a 6 o'clock start time in the evening during the week, except on Friday and Saturday, where we'll start at 8. And then we also have some 11 a.m. matinees and some 2 p.m. matinees. So basically, it's a wide-open schedule for Junoites as well as those who have visiting friends and family in town. If you're in town for a weekend, you could see up to all, you know, you could see all three plays if you wanted to. There's flex passes available so that you don't have to lock into a specific performance. And the three plays, which is probably what people are most interested in at the moment, are a remount of The Blue Bear, which we did in 2011 here in Juneau, and then 2012 up in Anchorage with the original cast. And then we're doing a new piece written and directed by Dave Hunsaker called Warriors. And it's all about Alaska Native warriors throughout time, including and up to two women who were in the Iraq War in 2006, I believe it is. And then we're also doing the 2013 Tony Award winner for Best Play, one of the funniest plays I've ever read, called Vanya and Sonia and Masha and Spike. The title's funny already. It's by Christopher Durang, so, you know, he's a wacky playwright, and it's a really fun look at family and what family means, and it's a great performance. Go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that, to interrupt you. So what you're doing is really bringing, like, classic summer theater rep to Juneau. I mean, this is like a staple all around the country, you know. But there's, of course, they made, like, old movies about it, too. I forgot what that one was called. You probably remember. But this is, like, classic summer rep theater in our own little burg. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's to showcase what Perseverance does throughout the winter, but to do it in the summertime. We feel like there's a lot of people who'd still enjoy theater in the summer, and it's also a place where we can showcase new work. Basically, I mean, Vanya and Sonia, even though it won the Tony for Best Play, nobody's seen that or heard of it here in Alaska. So that's a great new piece. And then the brand new piece by Dave, and then bringing back The Blue Bear for those people who didn't get to see it or who would like to see it again or share it with their friends and family when they come to visit town. So it's a great, basically is a summer rep for Juneau.
That sounds great. So Lynn Schooler was the author of Blue Bear. Did he do the adaptation for the play as well?
His sister, Lou Ann Schooler, as well as Leon Ingelsrud, who co-wrote and directed the piece. So it was Lou Ann and Leon who wrote the piece based on the book by Lynn Schooler.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and Lynn is a Junoite, so that has deep roots. And Dave is a local talent, which is local talent in Treasure, the other author for the Warrior piece. And then you're trying a new piece. And are all the actors from Juno, or are you bringing some people in from other places?
There's a couple guest actors in some of the pieces. There's also a lot of locals in some of the pieces. So it's a mix. It's a mix like we normally would do on our stages during the winter. And then a cool thing that I want to make sure I fit in here is that on this Saturday, we're having something called the Summerfest Launch Party. It's basically a dance party. It's going to be at the Jack. It's at like 8 p.m., I believe. And it's going to be, we're going to have Kari and the Wrist Rockets and DJ Manu playing. It's a fundraiser for Perseverance, as well as a chance to meet all of the artists involved, all the directors, all the actors and designers and things like that will be there. I'm hanging out, and we're just going to have a good time.
Sounds great. That's a great band, and 8 o'clock.
Sort of like a kickoff to the summer, and it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to have refreshments provided by the Vikings, so we'll have a bar there. We're going to have Pucker Wilson's, that food truck that's outside the Jack now, will be staying open and serving food. So there's going to be a lot of cool things. Oh, we're also going to have a totally unique thrift store. With duds for sale from the Perseverance costume and prop collection. So that's going to be just a fun evening and a way to kick off the summer.
Sounds like a party. So I'm assuming all the details as far as, because obviously you said something about a flex pass, so you could see, bring four people to one show or go see all three or whatever. I'm assuming all that stuff is on your website.
Everything is on our brand new website, which we just redesigned and tried to make it a lot easier. We're still getting up a lot of information on there, but all the basics are on there, and, of course, you could call the office and talk to me or anybody else here, and we can help you figure out, your way through the maze of Summerfest.
Exactly, and all the different options of buying a single ticket or saving a little bit of money by making the commitment to buy a flex pass.
Yeah, and subscribers to Perseverance get an even deeper discount. There still is a flex pass that saves you money off of single tickets as well. So there's all kinds of, little details that are explained on the website.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So before you go, I want to talk about your next season. I know that you're holding auditions, I think, in the next week or so.
Actually, we have auditions coming up. That's another thing to mention. There's so many things going on. We have auditions for Chicago this Sunday, and then for the rest of the season on Monday night. So if you're interested in that, you can contact Shona here at the theater. That information as well as on our website, of course. And just quickly, because I know we're running out of time here, we're opening the season with an Iliad by Lisa Peterson and Dennis O'Hare. It's a one-man show, which I'll be doing, and it's a modern retelling of Homer's The Iliad. So we're doing that. And then we're doing Chicago, the musical. And I like to say that it's the longest-running American musical, still on Broadway, still touring the country nationally, internationally. We finally convinced the producers that they're never coming to Juno. So we got the rights to do that show, so we're really excited about that. And then after the new year, we'll be doing The Mountaintop, which is a brand-new play by Katori Hall about an imagining of the last night of Martin Luther King Jr.'s life in a hotel. And then we'll be doing Neil Simon's The Odd Couple, which I know people are really excited about. In 36 years, Perseverance has never done Neil Simon. So we're really excited to bring that to Juno. And then the last show is still under consideration. We're looking for something in the vein of God of Carnage, Seminar, Boeing, something like that, where I think people really enjoyed Boeing, Boeing, and being able to laugh in May. So, you know, as opposed to, you know, I mean, it's a spring, it's summer out, and, you know, and we sold out the holiday weekend, which was great.
We were all delirious in May. The weather was amazing. There was great theater, which is a constant here because of your theater company and all the other theater companies.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, that is an incredibly ambitious. I mean, Chicago,
mm-hmm.
Odd Couple, new plays, and and also the summer thing just sounds great. Two Juno authors, and then Christopher Durang is hysterical.
He's just one of the funniest brains ever writing something down on a piece of paper, and so this play is really funny, and it's got some great people in it. It's got Ben Brown. It has Katie Jensen from Theater in the Rough is playing one of the lead roles. Patricia Hall, who just did the Mother Jones piece this last spring as a second stage over at Silver Bow, is playing in it as well. So it's just got a great, wonderful cast.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
So one more thing, and then I'll let you go.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy busy, obviously. You have a full slate of summer rep, and then you're kicking off your season as far as finding your actors and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But you also have a youth program this summer. So is that youth program, and there's still slots available for the STAR program?
Yes, absolutely. STAR, the Summer Theater Arts Rendezvous, which has been going on for some 30-some-odd years here in Juneau for kids 10 to 18, that is happening. And that's taking sign-ups now. There's information about that, of course, on the website. That's also a program run by Shona Strausser, our Director of Education. And then if you're an adult, if you're over 18, part of Summerfest, we've rolled in the Alaska Summer Theater Institute, which is an intensive week-long training in August with nationally renowned teachers in acting, playwriting, and voice. So if you're interested in doing those things, that would be wonderful as well if you're over 18. And then we'll be also be doing some readings on some new work during that same week. We'll be workshopping three new plays as well. So it's sort of like we're wrapping our new play stuff into the summer. And then the training is also incorporated in that for both the youth and the adults.
It's a good thing that we have long days because, my gosh, you've got a skeleton crew over there, and it looks like you're pushing those rocks up the mountain and doing an amazing job.
We're definitely pushing some rocks up some mountains. Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and it's keeping us busy, and we're just really happy to be making art for Juno and making theater and in this beautiful place that we live in. So mm-hmm. We're all, I'll speak for
the royal we. We're all happy that you're here because it's great stuff. So thank you
so much
for joining us by phone today. I understand why you couldn't make it over the bridge. Man, get back to work.
Thanks, Joan.
And I'll see you this summer.
Okay.
All righty. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 2nd of June, 2014. It was on this day, 1692, the Court of Oyer and Terminer convened in Salem Town, Massachusetts, beginning what would become known as the Salem Witch Trials. January of that year, the hysteria had begun. Few teenage girls, including the daughter of the village minister Samuel Parris, began acting strangely, having fits, and the girls started naming women in town who they said were witches, the minister's Caribbean slave, Tituba, and two women, Sarah Good and Sarah Osborne, who were eccentric and outcasts in the town. More teenage girls started to throw fits, crying out, disrupting church meetings, accusing reputable churchgoers, oftentimes people whom their parents had feuded with for years. Within a matter of weeks, warrants were issued for dozens of accused witches. The jails were full. Governor William Phipps ordered the formation of the special court of Oyer and Terminer to try the cases. The first was that of Bridget Bishop, a tavern owner, who was odd because she played shuffleboard and she dressed in clothing unsuitable for a woman, so she was found guilty, sentenced to hang on June the 10th. It was the first of 19 executions that took place over the next 4 months. A 20th victim, Giles Corey, was tortured to death when he refused to enter a plea. The hysteria spread to nearby towns, and people began to see it as a way to get revenge on neighbors with whom they'd been feuding. Many of the accused confessed to witchcraft, which was a way to escape execution. And then in October, Governor Phipps dissolved the court, prohibited further arrests. Many Puritan ministers in the colony had been calling for an end to the trials, and one factor may have been that some of the afflicted girls had accused the governor's wife of witchcraft. And it's the birthday of the man who said, "The business of the poet and the novelist is to show the sorriness underlying the grandest things and the grandeur underlying the sorriest things." Thomas Hardy, born in Higher Buckhampton in Dorset, England, 1840, whose first big success was Far From the Madding Crowd, 1874, wrote more novels, was tired of the scandal they caused, gave up on fiction, and returned to his first love, poetry. Here's a poem for today by Gary Snyder, "Hay for the Horses." He had driven half the night from far down San Joaquin through Mariposa, up the dangerous mountain roads, and pulled in at 8 a.m. with his big truckload of hay behind the barn. With winch and ropes and hooks, we stacked the bales up clean to splintery redwood rafters high in the dark, flecks of alfalfa whirling through shingle cracks of light. Itch of hay dust in the sweaty shirt and shoes. At lunchtime, under black oak, out in the hot corral, the old mare, nosing lunch pails, grasshoppers crackling in the weeds. "I'm 68, he said. "I first bucked hay when I was 17. I thought that day I started, I sure would hate to do this all my life. And damn it, that's just what I've gone and done." Hay for the Horses, a poem by Gary Snyder, from Rip Rap and Cold Mountain Poems, published by North Point Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
During the month of June, KTOO presents the work of Wayne Owen. Featured will be photographs and paintings of non-traditional natural history subjects meant to coax the viewer into reconsidering their perspectives on and relationships with the natural world. This show aims to challenge the viewer to see familiar sights with new eyes. Join us Friday, June 6th from 4:30 to 6 for an opening reception at the KTOO building for the art of Wayne Owen.
Hello, welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:22 p.m. I'm your Monday host, Joan Partis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And our next guest is Daryl Barrows. He is the assistant director of the IDEA Homeschool Program. Welcome to the show, Daryl.
Thank you, Joe.
So let's start at the very beginning. What is the IDEA Homeschool Program, and is it statewide?
It is statewide. We'd have to go back to 1997. A group of homeschoolers came to the Galena City School District, which is on the Yukon River, and said, we would like to homeschool. We'd like to homeschool in partnership with the school district and be accountable in some way and maybe get some financial support for doing that. And so Carl Knutson, who was the superintendent at the time, approached the State Department of Education, and Alaska is the only state that basically partners with homeschoolers and provides them an allotment, a financial allotment to buy their materials, and then creates a system of accountability with a learning plan and progress reports and work samples and things like that, partnering with them to educate their kids at home and providing financial support to do that. So IDEA has been around since 1997. We're the longest-running homeschool program in the state and the largest homeschool program in the state. So when we started, the State Department of Education said that you can go all over. It became so popular so quickly that they created a statewide program so we could enroll kids from Barrow to ADAC to Ketchikan.
That sounds great. And last year, how many kids did you have in the program?
About 3,900 last year. We grow every year.
Wow, that's a lot. And it's K-12, correct?
It is K-12.
Okay. So if, let's say somebody's listening and they're saying, wow, you know, maybe I do want to homeschool. What's the improvement that people need to make the decision that's right for their family?
You know, the most important aspect of it is that someone has to be at home during school hours. A lot of times parents, maybe their kid isn't having a very positive experience at the public school, and they want to try to do it after school when they come home from work. It just doesn't work. And so the first criteria is that somebody has to be home during school hours to do school. After that, the purpose of the IDEA program is to help parents homeschool. We partner with them. We show them not only the nuts and bolts of the paperwork that's required by the state, but to help them learn how to do it. We have people on staff that are curriculum experts, that are pedagogical experts, that help them through the problems that arise, and to basically hold their hand through the process until they become an expert. And really, you don't have to be a certified teacher. You don't have to be an expert in the field. There's so much curriculum out there that's so good and allows parents to become the expert, and part of our role is to help them with that, too.
Okay, and what does the help look like? So if somebody's, you know, it's kind of daunting for the average Jane or Joan, John Doe.
Sure.
I said Joan because that's true.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's say you're thinking about it, and it sounds very daunting. Can you just kind of paint kind of like the
sure.
arc of what...
Sure. A lot of parents come in and one of two categories. Either their kids have gone to public school and not had a positive experience, or they've got a five-year-old that they're thinking about sending off to kindergarten next year, and they think, can I do this, and what are the parts and pieces to it? In a kindergartner, there's, of course, learning to read and write, and there's math, and there's all of the components that go with that. A lot of what we do is we show them all of the curricula that's out there that they can use. There is thousands and thousands of different curricula to choose from that talks them through it, that's so easy to use, and it's so positive and so much fun. And parents can sometimes, there's a lot of anxiety that goes with it because they're worried that they're going to fail their kids or they're not going to be able to do everything that's required. And we show them the things that are required, the things that their child should be learning at the kindergarten grade level, and show them that they can do it, and give them a map and give them you know, the ILP, we call it, the Individualized Learning Plan, that shows the curriculum that they'll use and how they'll use it and how they'll assess their kids. And time again, the parents that have the most anxiety or the most fearful or the most worried that they can't, their kids just do amazingly well. And they craft such beautiful, positive relationships with their kids. They have they get to spend all day with their kids and do school, and it's during the best part of the day instead of when the kids come home from school and when the parents come home from their day and their errands and everybody's tired and a little bit grumpy and wants to do the dishes and eat dinner and fold the laundry and go to bed. They get to spend the best part of the day with their kids.
Sounds idyllic. So I assume that with 3,900 students, everyone has their own story. People come to homeschool for a variety of different reasons.
They do.
Location or wanting something different that's being offered. So it's one of the options.
You know, every kid learns differently. And with increasing class sizes especially, we find that classroom teachers, you know, they deliver the instruction one way. And while that works for a great many kids, sometimes it doesn't. And when parents come to us and their kids are a little bit older, it's because their learning style doesn't exactly fit. And the model that's in the classroom. And you might have an otherwise intelligent kid who learns just a little bit differently, who needs it delivered a little differently, or needs a little more time, and or needs the method of instruction to be a little more hands-on. And sometimes those small changes can make all the difference in the way that a kid learns and the degree of success that they have with academics. We've had kids come into the program who are getting D's and F's and not having a positive experience in school, who, when the instruction is given to them differently and they're allowed to learn it in the way that they learn, have just turned their academic lives around. And, of course, the pressure that takes off them and their parents and the positivity that results from that, it's a very rewarding, the most rewarding part of our jobs, I think.
Sounds great. If you're just joining us, we're chatting with Daryl Bowers, who is the Assistant Director of the IDEA Homeschool Program. And Daryl, you're based in Juneau.
I am.
Okay. Is there a number or a website that people, if they're intrigued, that
lots
they can
of information
chat with
you? On our website. Yeah, it's www.ideafamilies.org, and that's a mouthful. But if you just go to Google and type in IDEA Homeschool, it'll take you right to it. And there's lots of information on there. If you're considering homeschooling, you've thought about it, you can gather the information and, you know, gather your spouse and everybody that has a vested interest and show them all that's out. And come by the office, too, because we're happy to give people tours and show them that they, in fact, can do it.
Okay, where is the office?
The office is in the Kuchnua building in the valley. We're right below Canton House.
Okay.
So easy to find.
Great. And I guess this is the time that people are really starting to think about, you know, that school's ended and or they have a child who's just going to start school in the fall. I guess this is the time when people start thinking about it.
Absolutely. Whether families have had a less than positive experience in public school or whether their child is going to be five in the fall, this is the time when these decisions are being made. So I would recommend that families start gathering information now, and because really you want to be enrolled by no later than July 1st so that you can have all your paperwork sent in and your materials ordered by the second or third week of July so that it arrives at your house by the middle or the third week of August and you're ready to hit the ground running into the school year.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming by today. It was
thank
a pleasure
you for
to
inviting
chat.
Me. It's my pleasure, too.
Great. We're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
This is Bird Note.
Wouldn't it be great to change places with a bird? To fly freely, to perch on the highest branch, even to share the joys of building a nest. Just like that, your wish is granted. You switch places with a robin. The flying part is fun, but there's work to do. There's a nest to build. What would be the human-sized equivalent of a robin's nest? An average robin weighs less than 3 ounces. Let's say an average person weighs 170 pounds, or 1,000 times as much as a robin. A robin's nest, made of grass and mud, weighs about 7 ounces, so yours will weigh 450 pounds. You'll need to collect about 350 strands of grass, each about 4 feet long. And don't forget the mud, 150 pounds of it. You have 5 days to complete the job. Of course, being a robin, you'll have to carry all these materials in your beak. That's 300 mouthfuls of mud. On second thought, maybe you'd rather switch places with a plover and just rearrange pebbles on the ground to create a nest. Learn a lot more about nests and even peer into one via a webcam.
It's all on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Hi, my name is Lori Scandling, and I'm a proud member of Juneau Gastineau Rotary, one of many sponsors of the Family Fishing Day at the Lake, a fun-free day with all the gear provided June 7th at Twin Lakes. Lots and lots of community organizations are making this happen. Fish and Game, Forest Service, Territorial Sportsmen, KTOO, Juneau Radio Center, Super Bear, Coca-Cola, Northern Sales, Coast Guard Auxiliary, Juneau Libraries, and Juneau Schools. That's Family Fishing Day at the Lake, Saturday, June 7th, 10 to 3 at Twin Lakes.
Okay, we're back. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon on KTOO News Juneau. It is 3:33 p.m., and our next guests are here in the studio. We have Tish Satre from Cancer Connection. We have Scott Willman from the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. And they're here to talk about a presentation tonight at Centennial Hall from 5:30 to 7:30 about maintaining a healthy lifestyle. Trish, let me ask you, so what can people expect at this event tonight?
You know, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for people to come out and get some good information about healthy lifestyles because, you know, heart healthy, cancer healthy, there's some wonderful solutions out there that are pretty easy for people, and some that there's a lot of myths out there, and it's a chance to come and get some good information from a professional that works in the area with cancer survivors all the time.
Okay. So it's tonight from 5:30 to 7:30. There's a buffet dinner that will be provided. There's room for 100 people.
Correct. At this point, we've got 100 RSVPs, so it's standing room only for some if some folks would like to come down and do it. They may have a bit of a line, but we'll figure it out. We don't want people to be turned away from this event.
Okay. And Christina Rosengren is the presenter, and she's a physician's assistant who specializes in cancer?
Yes, she is.
Okay, that's Scott, who's visiting from Phoenix, from the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. So it's always great to have a subject matter expert here. And, Juno, we have many in town, but it's always nice when we have someone who's really seeing a lot. We're a small town, so when you go to a specialist, you want somebody who does something almost every day or a lot of the times. So let's talk a little bit about her expertise about maintaining a healthy lifestyle. And is it difficult to maintain a healthy lifestyle?
Well, it can be difficult. Some people find it more difficult than others, obviously. But Christina works in our internal medicine clinic within the hospital at Cancer Treatment Centers of America. She sees cancer patients every day, and she also has the benefit of working with some of the families. We're big on prevention, and there are certainly ways that maintaining a healthy lifestyle can prevent certain types of cancer.
And would this event be for people who have cancer or families of people who have cancer? Or
absolutely both.
Okay.
Yep. Most of that preventative education out there is applicable to absolutely everybody. But because they have the expertise in the area of cancer, you're going to see probably a bit of a focus there.
Okay. And once again, it's 5:30 to 7:30 at Centennial Hall. There'll be a buffet dinner. Right now, they have the 100 RSVPs, but we know in Juno sometimes say yes and you don't show up. So it's worth it for you to come. No one's going to be turned away. So, Tish, let's talk a little bit about Cancer Connection. And the tagline is Giving Hope to Alaskans. What you guys do here right in Juneau?
You know, we're a grassroots organization that started in 1996. Mike Miller, who was the head coach of swimming at the Glacier Swim Club, started it when he had an advanced case of prostate cancer. And he started a men's group, and nobody came. And he got together with some women and all of a sudden realized that if he broadened his effort from prostate cancer to all sorts of cancers, all of a sudden we had 25, 30 people coming to our support groups. And over the years, we've evolved from helping people with travel assistance. We have an apartment that we have down in Seattle now that helps people when they're going through treatment in the lower 48. We have educational forums such as this tonight. We're going to be doing the community health forums, men's and women's, a women's cancer retreat. But mostly what we're there is a group of folks that really want to give back to our community and provide one-to-one linkage with another person newly diagnosed. And so we have a phone line and support for those that are going through this sometimes very difficult journey.
Right. And there's the emotional part of that, which is obviously huge. But the data also says that this, like, has a big impact.
Absolutely.
So being connected is, like, huge.
It's
absolutely
huge.
It's not, like, just hand-holding, like, oh, I'll feel better. It has all the data, the science. Is that correct?
Well, exactly. And 40 years ago, people were, you know, it was all hush-hush, and you never knew if grandpa had it or what, you know. And many people died of it, you know. It was, like, getting past that 5 years. Well, you know, there's 14 million cancer survivors in the United States alone. And there's a whole group of people that are active in providing needs, concerns, and that, because the psychosocial aspect, the physical aspect, the support you get from family and friends and from other survivors is pretty amazing in regards to, I learned so much from other people about, it isn't just about, like, where to stay or who, what physician to see. It's about things you need to do on a regular basis to maintain optimum health. And that's the reality that hits you as a cancer survivor, and it's really great to connect with other folks as well. But it's a family disease. Everybody gets everybody's impacted.
Everybody's impacted. And I didn't want to interrupt you, but 14 million cancer survivors, woo-hoo! You know?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It's hard not to say that. That's,
yesterday
that's
was
terrific.
National Cancer Survivors Day, and we had our Celebration of Life walk, and that's exactly about it. It's a growing number of the population, and it's no longer always the death sentence that it used to be many years ago.
And the hush-hush don't say
absolutely.
It. So what is your relationship, Scott's here from Phoenix, with the Cancer Treatment Centers of America? What's the relationship between Cancer Connection here in Juneau and what Scott does?
You know, the important thing, without having a resident oncologist in town, many people in Alaska have to go outside for treatment and services. And what we have found is that the outreach that the different hospitals, the different cancer treatment centers do, Cancer Connection wanted to be an umbrella organization that helped bring information into town so people can make decisions every day about what their care is going to be. And so our relationship with cancer treatment centers is essentially one of just saying, let's provide information to the people in our community about what they're about. They come and visit their patients when they're here. It's a very high-touch, high information group, and we're just pleased to have them in town and connecting with people here. And if there's if people want to talk about what they do tonight, there'll be somebody there to do that. And if not, come for the educational information. And we just hope we have a really good turnout because we've got a great presenter tonight.
Right, and that presenter is probably because of your relationship
Absolutely.
With the Cancer Treatment Centers mm-hmm. of America. Mm-hmm. So Scott, is this your first time here?
No, I've been up here a couple of times. We came up last year. And did a symposium up here where we actually expected about 30 to 40 people and then ended up with over 75 people coming and realized there's definitely a need and we want to fill that need.
Okay, so one more time. Tonight, 5:30 to 7:30, a discussion about maintaining a healthy lifestyle. It's put on, sponsored by Cancer Connection
mm-hmm.
and the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. It's at Centennial Hall. And if you have any questions about anything you've heard, what's a good contact?
796-2273. Call Cancer Connection anytime.
Okay. And do you have a website?
Yes, you do. CancerConnectionAK.org.
Okay. Just look for it, Cancer Connection in Juneau. Thanks for all you do, both of you.
It's our pleasure.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Thank you.
So we're going to have one more speaker, storyteller up before we're going to take a short break. And that speaker slash storyteller is Quinn White. Quinn was born and raised in Douglas, not Juneau, Alaska. There's some fans. He currently attends Juneau Douglas High School as a junior, is an avid participant in the drama department, and is 17 years old. Quinn enjoys reading, writing, acting, science, computers, politics, philosophy, video gaming, watching nerdy shows on Netflix in the middle of the night, and sometimes people. He loves warm Pop-Tarts and ice-cold cider, and spends too much time researching useless things on the Internet, such as carbon nanotubes, the history of Kingdom of Mysore, and why no one knows how to correctly pluralize the word octopus. He also has a propensity for taking random things apart, which annoys his mom very much, although he almost always puts them back together correctly. Quinn can often be spotted astride his unicycle riding through downtown Douglas wearing his corresponding Day of the Week fedora. Quinn would like to get a job as a theoretical physicist, writer, or teacher, although his lifelong dream is to go and establish a colony on Mars. Quinn enjoys a number of people in his life, and those people include his Aunt Renee, who also lives in Douglas and lets him eat SpaghettiOs and other junk food that his parents won't let him touch. And that includes his sometimes over-concerned but always loving mom, Liz, his not bald but often sarcastic dad, Jeff, who does give him rides to lots of places. And, of course, his very loud, often bedheaded in the good way, younger brother Jack, who actually understands most of the things Quinn says, and sometimes very annoying, but always lovable, Dotson Scrappy. Please join us in having Quinn White, please.
All right. Okay, so there's probably a lot of stories I could tell relating to this topic, but I decided to go with a very literal representation of this. So when I was in the eighth grade, so it's probably pretty clear that I'm not much of an organized sports kind of guy. But my parents decided it'd be a good idea for me to get some exercise, so they had me enrolled in the middle school wrestling club. Looking back on it, that probably wasn't the best idea, but nonetheless, I did it, and I actually enjoyed it for the most part. I wasn't awful, but I wasn't great, and so I practiced for about a month for, you know, an hour or two every day after school, after a month or so of, you know, training and getting ready, I was able to go to the first meet that I could compete in. So the first match came, and I'm sitting on the bench, you know, this scrawny little kid, and I've got it on this ridiculous unitard. And if you've ever worn one of those, you know that it's a very humiliating experience and just not something that you want to have happen. So I go, and the first match starts, and it just went terribly. Like, I don't think I got a single point in that match. He pinned me down, like, in this right at the beginning of the second match, and it did not go well. So by this point, I was pretty beat up, but I was determined to at least, like, not fail so badly in the second one. So I go over to the practice mat on the side, and I'm like, I'm getting ready, and my first move that I'm going to do for the second match, I'm practicing it over and over, you know, just drilling it up, and I'm watching my opponent in the match before ours, and I'm observing him. I'm like, okay, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. And so I get on the mat, and the ref blows the whistle, and I think that match lasted for a total of maybe 5 seconds. The move that I had practiced, I'm not sure exactly what I was thinking, and I can't remember exactly what it was going to be, but it didn't work out, and my opponent got around behind me and was able to kind of push me down, and while I was going this way, he came around this way, and So his weight and my weight, and the force of him pushing me down was a lot more than my left arm, which I was trying to catch myself with, was able to take. And I just heard this crack. And I knew something was wrong, but I wasn't sure exactly what it was. And so I'm laying on the mat kind of on my back, and I look over, and my wrist is at like a 90-degree angle to my elbow. And it was pretty terrifying. And they say when humans are in like extreme danger, they can, you know, accomplish like superhuman feats. Well, it turns out that when I'm in extreme danger, the superhuman feat that I can accomplish is screaming really loudly. So I just hear this, and to this day is the most terrifying, loudest thing that I've ever heard. And it was only like after I got done doing that that I realized it was me. I was like, oh, okay. So ironically, my wrestling coach had actually been trained as an EMT, and he kind of just walks over and looks at him and is like, yup, it's broken. So my parents come down from the stands, and everyone's kind of, you know, looking around, and they call 911, and they have to, the EMTs get there, and the paramedics, and they have to kind of set it, in order to get me to the hospital, they have to kind of set it so that they can, you know, put me on the ambulance. And so they set it so that it's more, you know, straight, but not completely. So I get to the hospital, and they kind of knock me out and start, you know, and put me in like a temporary cast. It's just, you know, ace bandages with like a piece of steel to, you know, reinforce it. And so that was on a Friday. And so on Monday, I had to go and they put a cast on me, and this was on Valentine's Day, and so the doctor who was putting the cast on was determined that I should get a pink cast. I didn't, but so I'm in a cast for about 2 months, and you know, I'm finally better, and my arm is, you know, it's still weak, and it's you know, I'm still pretty conscious of it, but it's better. So 6 months later, around July, I'm over at my brother's friend's house, and we're picking him up from, you know, spending the night there. And well, he has a trampoline, and so we're out. Yeah, I know. So my brother and my brother's friend and I are out, and we're jumping on this trampoline, and my brother, you know, double bounces me. You know, it's that thing when he, you know, he jumps down and I go up, and I landed wrong, and I landed too close to the spring, and it happened again, pretty much. And so, you know, they call the ambulance, and the ambulance gets there, and ironically, it was one of the same EMTs was there, and he's like, dude, you gotta stop doing this. So I get to the hospital, and they're like, we're going to have to do surgery on it because, you know, it's not, you know, we can't put it in a cast again. But they can't do surgery if you've had anything to eat, like, an hour before that. Now, my parents, like I said, never have let me have junk food, or barely ever. And but I had, at 14, I had my very first Twinkie, like, right before I jumped on that trampoline. Because my brother's, you know, friend, they had Twinkies. And so I had to, this was at like 3 p.m., so I had to wait till like 1 a.m. till they could finally do surgery. And I was knocked out, and they put these metal bars in my arm, and they're like a stainless steel titanium alloy and these enormous screws. And I'll never eat Twinkies again. I can tell you that much. And so that's my scar story. And so I'm sure you want to see them. You can kind of see right here and then right here. And I have the X-rays if anyone's interested. So you can see them later after the thing. But yeah, I'm a lot more conscious of trampolines and wrestling and Twinkies. So thank you very much.
Hello, welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:54 p.m. That was from a November mudrooms of last year. Our final guest is Deb Vaness. She is a visiting author. She lives up in the Anchorage area. She is the co-founder of 49 Writers, a great resource for writers throughout the state. And she's doing a writing workshop tonight about Point of View at the Jack. There are still maybe two or three slots still available for that. You can check it out at 49 Writers. She is the author of 14 books comes this summer, and thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, John.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. Tell us about the workshop tonight. It's from 6 to 9 at the Jack. People could register at 49writers.org. But what's the topic?
So the topic's point of view and perspective. And if you do decide to come tonight, make sure that you bring something to write with and that you could register in advance, 49writingcenter.org. You can pay online. We have just a couple slots left. So what we're going to be doing that's a little different than what people might be used to with point of view is not just talking about what I call the gotcha point of view, that, Joan, you slipped here and your point of view fell off and you need to bring it back. We're going to just brush that aside, and we're going to look at how to make point of view work for you as a writer, perspective, psychic distance, and we're going to do some writing, so it's going to be fun.
Sounds great. So for full disclosure, I was at Northwards up at Skagway. Deb was one of the faculty. It was a great weekend, and Deb's a fantastic instructor, so I'm just speaking from experience since I was there this weekend. So also, you have something going on called the Alaska Sampler. Can we talk about that with your Running Fox Books entity?
For sure. And I'll try to bookend this with the website so people can look at it. We're at runningfoxbooks.com. And Running Fox Books is a cooperative of Alaska-inspired independent authors. I know everyone in Alaska is independent, but in terms of authors, it means that we have not only published with traditional publishers, but we've also published on our own. And all of us at Running Fox just join together. We aggregate our marketing efforts. We help each other out. It's nothing that costs anything to anyone. I decided once I was going to bring out a couple of backlist titles that had gone out of print. I was going to be doing all this stuff anyway, so why not ask my friends to join me? So that's Running Fox Books. And David Marusik, who's a fantastic fiction writer from Fairbanks, has been my mentor through this whole process. And we sort of co-founded Running Fox Books, although the organization structurally falls under a business venture that I already have. But David helps me all along the way. And we came up with this idea of the Alaska Sampler 2014. We hope to do it every year. A couple of months ago, so we kind of crashed it into publication, but we're very pleased with how it came out. It is a free ebook that's available on for multiple devices. You can find it at our website, runningfoxbooks.com, or you can find it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Kobo, some of the big ebook vendors. And it is a collection of selections by 10 pretty well-known Alaskan authors, a very nice variety. It opens with Dana Stabenow. It ends with Ned Rozelle, who's a fantastic science writer. In it, you'll find humor, biography, memoir, fiction. You'll find novel excerpts. You'll find complete short stories. And so I encourage people to, you know, spread the word and tell people about it. We're actually just wrapping our beta launch, which means we'll be uploading a version with just a couple of typos corrected. But David Marusik, who did the production end of it, is quite a perfectionist. So it's very high quality. The work is all high quality. We're very proud of it.
That sounds great. So that's, if you just joined us, that's Deb Vaness talking, and she is going to do a workshop tonight at the Jack from 6 to 9, a 49 Writers sponsored workshop on point of view and perspective. And runningfoxbooks.com has a free Alaska sampler, so you could go and download the book and read some of Alaska's best and very own. So that's great. And then Deb is also doing something at the library tomorrow at the Valley at 5:30, but she's going to come back and talk to Scott tomorrow at 3 or sometime during the 3 hour tomorrow. So I'll let you do that because we're going to have to wrap it up. So it's 3:58 p.m. You've been listening to Juno Afternoon. Come on down to the Jack tonight for a writing workshop. Also, Dr. Elaine Schroeder's show is on tonight at 7. Mind Over Matter. She's going to be talking to Master Fitness Trainer and Pilates Instructor Julia Carver. So that's 7 o'clock on KTOO. And then there's lots going on. If you were listening to the show, you know that. And as far as the weather, tonight is cloudy. Tomorrow's cloudy. Tomorrow night is mostly cloudy. Scattered rain showers, lows around 45. Wednesday, mostly cloudy. And it looks like mostly cloudy, rain likely right through the weekend. Thank you for listening. And All Things Considered is next.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoon.